Let's begin the half hour with what's happened this week with China. We have taken some steps that have never been taken before. The Trump administration first sanctioning a Chinese bank. Then they're giving $1 billion in arms to Taiwan. How's China going to react? Daniel Joseph is here, founder of the China Learning Curve. It's ChinaLearningCurve.com. Spent many years in China. Daniel, great to have you on WILS.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
Yeah. Now, how long were you in China working?
I lived there for 10 years, and I've been focused mostly on China in my career for almost 25 years now. So I travel there, and I've already been there, I think, 5 times this year. So, still close, keep close tabs on the place.
Yeah, that's not an easy flight either to fly to China, right?
Well, no, it's a 12-hour time difference. The flights are, the direct flights are basically 12 to 14 hours, and then if you have to connect, it adds on to that. So takes its toll.
That's some serious jet lag. So how do you imagine China reacting to what we did this week, yesterday, really?
Well, I mean, I don't think I don't think it's going to provoke too strong of a reaction. First of all, we've been selling arms to Taiwan, for quite some time, and the last time was, 2015, about the same size sale of arms. And China always gets upset. They don't want us to be doing that technically, but they understand that although we still support the one China policy, we're kind of trying to split the middle, and we haven't completely abandoned Taiwan. So, they will give us their normal reaction, which is that they won't stand for this, et cetera, et cetera. But I think the status quo will remain in place as long as we adhere. What really shook them up, obviously, was when, that phone call from Trump and the talk about maybe the one China policy isn't going to continue. But then we since dropped that. So in due course, I think they'll take this in stride.
And how do you think they view President Trump as a whole right now?
Well, I mean, I honestly think that, the Chinese view of Trump has always been perhaps more positive than you would think because, first of all, politics is all local, so they don't dive into that or necessarily understand the divisiveness of some of our own politics. Secondly, they've always perceived Trump to be a businessman and his harsh rhetoric to be, posturing, taking a position for an upcoming negotiation. And as a businessman, they've always assumed that he's probably practical and he's not going to start some trade war that doesn't benefit anybody. Mm-hmm. So they've always been thinking it's going to come down to the negotiation. And obviously, so far, the saber rattling has obviously quieted a bit and we're trying to work with them. There could still be some trade battles ahead. We haven't come to that yet, but okay. So far it's been quieter than a lot of people expected, and I think the Chinese thought that it would happen that way.
So if the money's their focus, trade and so on, when we're talking about sanctioning their banks, apparently this was a small one that was doing business dealings with North Korea, laundering money, apparently. If we start sanctioning bigger banks, could that really set something off?
I mean, it could. This thing right here, I mean, what this is about, this is directed at North Korea, saying we have evidence that a Chinese bank, most of its transactions, or a lot of transactions, seem to be dealing with North Korea, and therefore we think that it's North Korea trying to skirt our own sanctions. Mm-hmm. So we're sanctioning that bank, not the Chinese government. We haven't accused the Chinese government of manipulating this or using the bank as a front. So really, it's something that's easy for the Chinese government to distance itself from and say, well, it's a small bank that maybe broke some rules. So as it stands right now, it doesn't have to be and will likely not be a big deal. I mean, to the extent, even if, let's say, China is in favor of the bank doing that, they can kind of switch the transaction somewhere else for the time being if they want. I'm not accusing them of doing that. But for now, it's not a big deal. Like you said, if it becomes a problem where we keep going after money that's coming through China, then yes, it could be more of a thorn in the side of the relationship.
It doesn't sound like would you say they're generally not very emotional in how they act and the leadership style?
I mean, the guy in charge right now, he's known for being very even-keeled, very level-headed. I'm not sure that's a traditional throughout their culture and their history. But certainly this leader is. And I think their government I think if we work with them, they're going to be less likely to overreact. That's not a great risk because they have a lot to lose should they disrupt their relationship with us and the global economy. So I don't think they're going to be reckless, but I do think that this North Korea situation has the potential to flare up between us and China and the West.
From our perspective, this is obviously a big issue. The Trump administration is taking it very seriously. Do you think the Chinese view it as big of a deal also?
Yes, I think it is. I mean, it's not really a national one. I mean, they consider North Korea to be a thorn in the side, but they have a big difference between us. We would love to see North Korea go away. They don't want North Korea to go away. They want a buffer between themselves and our ally, South Korea. Mm-hmm. So we're on one side. We don't like China doesn't like some of the things North Korea is doing. An irrational North Korea doesn't help China. And I do think they have, as President Trump insinuated, honestly tried to defuse the situation. They just haven't been successful. So we're running out of options. Mm-hmm. And that leads us to the brink of maybe having to make some decisions that aren't going to sit well with China. We're not going to challenge China's sovereignty. We're not going to threaten them. But if we could take actions that's relative to North Korea that they don't favor, so we have to continue to try to coordinate with them, right, but perhaps take more aggressive action than we have in the past, because nothing's working.
We're talking to Daniel Joseph. Find him at ChinaLearningCurve.com, ChinaLearningCurve.com. It almost sounds, Daniel, that what we're doing now isn't really having very much of an impact on China either way. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, right now we haven't, as compared to the tone of the campaign on both sides, our relationship with China has really not changed really significantly since the Trump administration took office. Mm-hmm. I do think there are some more aggressive trade negotiations that will take place in the not-too-distant future.
Right.
But right now, nobody's upset the apple cart.
What happens if we do something that does upset China? How would they strike back at us?
Well, I mean, if it's a trade issue, then, it's always easy for someone to counterpunch if they don't like you do something on trade. You shut down a market for them, they do the same thing for you.
They're much more dependent on our market than we are on theirs, right?
Well, technically from an import-export sort of way, but I mean, at the end of the day, here's how I would put it. We have, I think, believe it or not, overall, right now, obviously we're a much wealthier country than they are, and we also have... They piled on too much debt as well, so I kind of think we have a more stable economy. So I think we can take a little bit of a trade war more than they can, but still, we don't have a terribly strong economy, and it wouldn't help us if our major corporations had certain markets shut down, or we're not able to purchase their materials or make some investments. So it wouldn't help either side. I mean, technically, we could shut their exports off, more of their exports, but that hurts us as well as them. So I'm not sure that would be good for either side. The more pressing issue is, what would happen if a confrontation were to arise more likely over the South China Sea or something like that? Mm. How far would China go before pulling short and saying, well, we don't want to exchange fire. We don't want this to become a real war.
Yeah, what is their approach? Because obviously they feel like they're the main power in Asia now. How do you imagine them dealing with us if we really became serious militarily with them?
Well, I think on the North Korea front, I think the most important thing we have to do is just try to keep them informed. And, in these types of confrontational situations, the fewer surprises, the better. So even if we're going to do something, like perhaps a missile strike if we have to, I don't think we want to surprise China, because that never works well. As far as the South China Sea goes, we're going to keep pushing on each other there. They're not going to back off. I think where it's going to end up being is we're going to say, well, you can, you have those islands. You can set up your installations. But we are going to demand freedom of navigation, and I don't see China wanting to start a war over that. So I think that's where the stalemate's going to be. Fine, you have the islands. We're not going to start a war to knock you off of those islands. But we're also not going to, we're going to sail where we think legally we can, where international law says we can. And if that's a problem with you, then you're going to have to talk to our aircraft carriers that we're bringing into this part of the world. So I think that's where it's going to end up balancing out.
Now, did when you look at the Chinese leadership, is it the kind of leadership that if they could take advantage of us, if they felt they had an edge over us militarily, they would do something about it? Is that their calculus of things? Or
ever since, going back to 1980 and Deng Xiaoping, the theory in China was, keep a low profile and bide your time. In other words, we're a poor country. We need to grow and develop. We don't need a large profile on the international stage. The current leader, Xi Jinping, is the first one to say, well, it's our time to step out and to do things we've never done. Everything from start our own development bank to what they're doing in the South China Sea. Frankly, from my point of view, I think she pulled the trigger a little too early. he's focused too much on the outside of China and not taking care of business inside of China and making that economy continue to grow. He's missed opportunities to do that. I still think, even though he's being more aggressive, they understand that what they need to do is grow that economy. The Communist Party's legitimacy is built on a growing economy, and you don't grow the economy by starting a war. So I think there's a little bit of saber rattling, but I do not think they want confrontation. They want stability. I think if we stand up for ourselves in a non-confrontational way, which I think we're doing a good job of right way, we can kind of, you know, we can push back a little bit without getting out of hand.
Yeah. In your view, is President Trump doing things then that we have not seen from other administrations? Is he taking us somewhere we have not been with China?
I mean, not dramatically, not yet. I think he sets a different tone. I think, you know, it's still early in his administration. Obviously, the rhetoric is changing relative to North Korea. We just did our first freedom of navigation exercise a short while ago since Trump took office. So we're drawing the same lines in the sand in the South China Sea. And, of course, the rhetoric on trade has been very hard line. But now Trump is taking a more practical approach. The jury is still out on what we're going to do on trade. I'm hoping myself that we push them to open their markets. That's what we really need to do. Putting tariffs on some of their exports to us, the ones that, you know, steel, that where there is some sort of dumping, sure. Right. But broadly, that doesn't help us. But if we push them further to open their markets, that's where the logjam has been for about a decade, and that's where we need to push them.
Daniel Joseph, he's the founder of the China Learning Curve. Find him at ChinaLearningCurve.com, ChinaLearningCurve.com. Daniel, thank you very much.
Hey, thanks for having me, Michael. Take care.